Dan Menigan back with you here on The Fan. Coming up next, we've got Tom Reed from The Athletic. He covers pretty much all things Columbus. The Blue Jackets comes up and covers the Browns a little bit, too. He was on top of a boatload of this Save the Crew stuff. And so I'd love to get his opinion on what took place, what he knows, where things are going to go, because there are a lot of questions that are out there. For those of you who had not known, for those of you who haven't been listening to our updates all day and didn't hear yesterday, a group, including the Haslam family, has stepped in to negotiate purchasing the Columbus Crew so that the Crew can stay in Columbus instead of before, where Anthony Precourt was attempting to move the team down to Austin. So we bring on the man who is on the forefront of all of these good things, Tom Reed. Tom, thanks for joining me, man. How are you?
Good. And yourself?
I'm very well. I'm sorry to wake you up this early.
No. I've been up for a while.
Okay, good. All right, that makes me feel a little better. Also, Tom Reed joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, Tom, we're going to start with the Crew, and we'll shift over to the Browns in a little bit. So about when did you hear that the Haslams might be interested in purchasing the Crew?
Well, just the long version, I'll give it a little bit of the long version. When this all started last year, when it first came to light that Anthony Precourt was going to move the team or had designs on moving the team to Austin, Jimmy's name surfaced right away. So we're talking almost like a year ago. Whenever news broke that the team was going to move, I can remember sniffing around, and at the time there was nothing to it. The connection here is Alex Fisher, who runs the Columbus Partnership. His relationship with the Haslam family goes back to the Tennessee days. So it was always kind of one of those names to kind of keep in mind. I know that they were looking for local ownership as well, and they found that with the Pete Edwards family. But Jimmy's name was always kind of like, well, maybe. Yesterday morning it was very strong, and it was just kind of fighting to get a confirmation with it. But so yesterday, for sure, early in the morning, you started to hear rumblings that he and Dee's name were being bandied about as the possible owners.
So with all of their names being bandied about, and of course their obvious connection to Cleveland here, what does this mean for the Browns? Is this something where we're going to maybe get like a little bit of a timeshare that we're looking at, where training camp may find its way somewhat down to Columbus with the Crew finding its way up here, or we still don't know yet working out the kinks?
Yeah, I was told yesterday that the training camp is going to stay put. You know, the Brea just put in they put a lot of money into the camp up there. I think I don't think it's going to be coming down here. Let's put it that way anytime soon. First of all, they don't even have a stadium yet. They have to build the stadium. And this area where I don't know if there will be a training facility that goes with this. Again, I have no idea what the plans are. I just know where they want to put the stadium. It doesn't seem like they would be able to put the practice grounds there as well. So, yeah, I think it's way too early to get into that kind of talk. But I was told yesterday by somebody that right now that's not part of the consideration.
Interesting, because that would have been the thought, because I know there's been a little bit of rumbling. Every so often you hear something up here of an MLS team possibly coming to Cleveland, that there may possibly be the fan base to support it with, you know, the men's team coming up here and playing every so often, and the U.S. women's team as well. Is there anything to an MLS team coming to Cleveland, or even a USL team or something along those lines that you're hearing, or not really?
Well, you know, obviously the focus yesterday was Columbus.
Yeah, it was very heavy Columbus.
There's no way I can't imagine them putting ever, you know, they would have to build a separate stadium. I don't think they want to go in there. There are a few teams in the league. New England comes to mind. Seattle comes to mind that do play in football stadiums. But the league would prefer kind of a soccer-specific stadium of like 20,000 or so. It would just look like there's nobody there at the stadium. So until someone comes forward to buy a stadium, I think part of this is, you know, the Haslam is not only just doing this, but, you know, expanding the Brown footprint. I mean, this is Alejandro Moreno today, who was part of the championship team on 2009, was tweeting out, "I'm a Browns fan now." And I think, you know, this is a market for people who have lived down here and watched the Browns struggle for so many years. You've seen the Cincinnati market as the Bengals kind of got better there for a little while. And certainly, I can tell you, there are tons of Steeler fans here. So this is, I think, a way to kind of expand the Browns' footprint into Columbus without necessarily bringing anything down here. There'll probably be a lot of Baker Mayfield shirts maybe sold in the gift shop. But I think that's where it starts. Where it goes, again, I can't see the future, but I think right now that's where it is.
Tom Reed joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, Tom. The other question, too, comes down to this stadium, because I know that was always the sticking point in Anthony Precourt's thought process with this team, is he wanted a stadium. Do you know anything on how the Haslams were able to get the stadium, or if Columbus is paying for it, or if they are?
I don't know what the you know, again, this how it has to be approved, but okay. I would have to think it would be some kind of, you know, I don't know.
You're perfectly fine. I'm putting you on the spot with that one.
It's certainly going to be a private, you know, I'm sure the Haslams and the Edwards family will be, you know, paying a good share of it. I don't know if it's a public-private venture. The Edwards family, they have developed the brewery district, which is just south of the city, or south of downtown, I should say. So, you know, they'll be, I'm sure, heavily involved in maybe the planning of this. It's just an exciting time. It sounds like the prime location is in part of the Nationwide Arena District, which has the hockey arena and the baseball stadium. So it'll kind of give the area a little bit of a corporate campus with tons of stuff to do, already built around it. That was always part of the problem with Crew Stadium. Not only was it old, but there's nothing out there. There's simply nothing to draw people out there to go have a couple of drinks or go get something to eat and then walk to the game. Now that will change.
Yeah, and that was always the problem with Crew Stadium, is they kind of put it in a bad area just for the idea that maybe it would help grow the area, and it just never did. I mean, I'd been down there a couple times for a couple Crew games, and you know, U.S. men's team, I'm down there all the time for it. I mean, it's basically
right.
A home stadium for them. So the fact
and
that
I
the
think,
oh, you go
yeah,
on.
You're right, and I think the other thing is that they come in at a good time because of, for the longest time, Columbus has had to, and I understand it, you know, Toronto's arrival and Chicago's arrival, and I totally get that. They've been in the league from the beginning. But now you're going to see Cincinnati. You're going to have the whole idea of the Cincinnati-Columbus rivalry, which is always kind of festering. They've played once or twice. And then Nashville. So you're going to have these cities. Nashville has a natural hockey rivalry with Columbus, so fans that know that one. I think it's just going to be a really good time, and I think it really will work.
It's awesome. I mean, it's awesome that they were able to keep one of the original MLS teams right where it belonged, right where it was built. It's great for the league, it's great for the city, and it's great for soccer fans everywhere. This is a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think we can't do this segment without just giving a shout out to the Save the Crew movement.
Yes, 100%.
It's funny that the Anthony Precourt tried to get that whole grassroots movement for done in Austin, and I think it had like 5,000 followers on Twitter, and yet here just so many people came together, and they got so much help from businesses, and it really was a grassroots movement. Morgan Hughes and his group just deserve so much credit for this, because I don't think if there wasn't an outcry initially, that maybe this gets done. So I mean, the fans and those people who have really, really gotten behind this movement to save the team deserve so much credit today.
I'm 100% with you. And the other one who deserves a bit of credit is Mike DeWine, for the fact that he basically sat back and said, here's this rule and we're going to enforce it.
Yeah, any obstacle that they were able to throw in front of them was going to delay the whole move anyway. Again, I think, Alex Fisher and his group were on this pretty early as far as to try to find local ownership. But again, any little obstacle that could be thrown up in front of Precourt to delay things, to give these guys more time to get this done, helped. And certainly, you know, the ironically named Modell rule is certainly played a factor as well.
Well, and it's funny that you bring that up, because I was just going to transfer over to the Browns real quick and pick your brain a little bit on it. So let's do this first. So for those of you who don't know, the Art Modell rule is basically put into practice after the Browns move, saying that you can't just pick up and move a team. You have to find local ownership to take over it first, right? Does that sound about right, Tom?
Yeah. I mean, it's publicly funded. The publicly funded part is part of that there. But yeah, that's the spirit of it, at least. You know, it was never tried in court. No one knows for sure if it would have worked had they gone to it. But what I think would have forced it as things had gone along, as long as they could have gotten the judge to at least give them, you know, at least one ruling, is the MLS would have had to open its books. And for people that aren't MLS fans, it is a kind of a weird organization where the league technically owns all the teams. And I don't think the MLS really wanted to start opening their books for this thing.
Yeah, if kind of from the rumblings that I heard, Tom, I think you're 100% right on that one. The MLS really didn't. So they found this win-win situation, and here we are. And thank goodness for the Haslams, and thank goodness for the family down in Columbus, and, of course, the Save the Crew movement, because we've kept soccer in Ohio.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. And actually, I'm fascinated to see what happens with this whole Austin team now.
Yeah, I'm with you too.
The fact, you know, they were, you know, just a month or two ago talking about getting started next season. Now they're saying, you know, by the latest 2021. We'll see how that goes. And then again, well, the other thing I was really happy with people in Columbus, they never made it about Austin. They never made it about the city of Austin. And that's the way it's. Austin's a great city. I mean, their anger was directed toward the man that was wanted to move the team there. But it never became this back and forth between Austin and Columbus. I mean, I think Columbus showed a lot of class in trying to hold on to its team and not make this an anti-Austin type of situation.
Yeah, it's the same way that that Seattle handled it when they ended up moving the Sonics down to Oklahoma City. Is it was always against the owner that moved it instead of against Oklahoma City themselves. And that's always the right way to look at it. Look, it's not Austin's fault. This has nothing to do with Austin, Texas. It's merely an owner who wanted a new stadium and a city that didn't want to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, it's strange. I think the thing you have to remember is that, you know, when people did some digging, it was from the moment he bought the team several years ago, that was in the agreement that he could move the team to Austin. So, as you look back at it, he bought this team with designs and moving it. Anyone that came down to games and stuff, there was just very little money put into the infrastructure of the stadium. You know, I'm sure you've seen all the videos of the overflowing restrooms and all the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The wobbly railings and all that. They just didn't put a dime into the stadium. I mean, they did, to his credit, they did put money into the actual product on the field. But, just this year, the schedule was ridiculous. They had very few games in the summer months. Everything was during the cold weather time, even right up to the idea that they celebrated the 10th anniversary of the Crew's championship victory on the same night Ohio State was playing a home game against Penn – or, I'm sorry, same night Ohio State was playing Penn State. That is a night game. You know, that was – you know, there's no question in my mind that was designed that way, just to keep the crowd down.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm so happy we're on the other side of this, Tom. I really am. As a soccer fan, I'm just thrilled that we're on the other side of this. All right, I have to make my boss happy and ask you one Browns question, okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. What do you think of Duke Johnson coming out and saying he needs more touches?
I think he probably could use a few more. I think from Duke's point of view, that it stinks that he's not getting the ball more. And, man, that was a huge couple carries he had to set up the field goal the other day. I wrote about this in the summer, right leading into the season. One of the issues this team has had over the last 2 years is Duke Johnson's been their most reliable playmaker. That's on a 1-31 team. And I love Duke Johnson. I'm president of the Duke Johnson fan club. But you can't have a third down back being your best playmaker. And the fact that Duke is now a fourth, fifth option is, to me, a sign of progress, that you now have a team that can make plays all over the lot. You've got some receivers, even as they're getting banged up left and right, but you have receivers that can make plays. You have two running backs that can make plays, that can either run hard or even in some cases with Chubb run explosively, and of course Baker Mayfield. So, yeah, I think Duke has kind of move down the pecking order a little bit. It'll be interesting to see if they try to get him the ball a little bit more. But, hey, competition is good for everybody, maybe not for Duke. But I think it's a sign of progress. For too long, he was their best player, and you can't win when your best player is a third down back.
I'm 100% with you, and not to mention competition usually leads to winning, and it leads to watchable football, which is the best thing you could say about this team this year. You don't miss Browns games on Sundays.
No, without question. I wrote about that last week. That is the biggest. I mean, I don't know where this goes this season, but you can't take your eyes off of them, good or bad. I mean, they're fun to watch. When's the last time we could say that about the Browns? And even you think back to the 2014 season, it was clear, even though they were winning games, that there was problems with Johnny Manziel and there was problems with Justin Gilbert, and that this draft, these coaches were doing this kind of without what was supposed to be the talent. In some ways, they kind of did it with Mears and, a hot Brian Hoyer for about 10 weeks. But water eventually found its level. I don't get the sense with that. This feels like the beginning of something to me.
I'm 100% with you.
Yeah, it's just a team that it's going to get better. There's going to be rough patches, but there's enough players on this team on both the offense and the defensive side of the ball. This is the best defensive line I can remember the Browns having since I was a kid. There obviously in the 80s, during the Bernie stretch, there were some good, Michael Dean Perry, that stretch. But boy, you have three guys in Myles Garrett, Larry Ogunjobi, and Ogba. Those are that's a really good way to start building a defensive line. And then you bring in Denzel Ward. What a playmaker he's been right off the bat. A lot of optimism.
Yeah, there is. It's through the roof. And the one thing I could say with Denzel Ward and the one thing I could say with Baker Mayfield, these dudes belong. They belong in the league. And how long have we been wanting to say that a Browns draft pick belongs in the league? Just fantastic, man.
Yeah. And you give credit to John Dorsey, because those necessarily weren't the no-brainer picks, right? I mean,
yeah, not at all.
A lot of people wanted Sam Darnold. I probably would have preferred Sam Darnold. I didn't have a problem with Baker Mayfield, especially the way the league is starting to go now. These offensive coordinators and coaches are finally understanding the game has to mesh with the college game, or you're just going to keep pounding square pegs in round holes. But Denzel Ward wasn't necessarily the sexy pick, so to speak.
No, not at all. They were panned for it.
Yeah. So, good on them, and good on the people that did the scouting and the analytics on these guys. And I think one of the ironic things is that, everyone said when Sashi Brown was gone, like, death to analytics, it's over. Both of those picks were analytics darlings.
Yeah.
They're in a good place right now. The team is in a good place right now. They've got a couple of good veteran coordinators. Hughes coming along a little bit. So all positives with this team right now.
Tom, thank you for the time, man. Congratulations. We hopefully are on the right path, not 100% there, but at least 80% there to saving the crew. So thank you, man. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Take care. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Tom Reed of The Athletic right there. You can read him at The Athletic. He was brought to us right here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.